It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North convenience stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
He wanted to bring up something yesterday, we didn't get to it, but the Jets and some comments from Woody Johnson, just overall where they're at as an organization.
Yeah, so I think it's very interesting here where the last story that we saw about the Jets is the, what you referenced with Woody, him clapping back at the NFLPA, the F-minus grade that was bestowed upon the Jets organization so amazingly by the players, and he's obviously very sensitive to it. Now, the thing that I wonder about, and it's a fascinating, we won't have the answer now. We could have the discussion now. We won't get the answer now. Like, when you are that poorly owned, I don't know how else to say it. Sorry, Woody.
Well, they get graded an F. I mean.
Yeah. I mean, not only, but even if they got an A, their record's an F, like
good
in terms
point.
Of the win
right.
losses. So
right. It's all
of
the above.
The Jets are an F. I'm sorry. They did not get that wrong. You can drop the class and take it over, but the first time you got an F. All right. So during the Woody reign, it's been a failure. And I know he's trying to change things up. The Muji hire, the Glenn hire, the quick decision with Rodgers. Now, that could prove to be the wrong decision if he goes to the Steelers and plays great, like I think you and I think he might. But it was a swift decision. There was no, like, 2-3 weeks of stories. It was done, and that was it.
Yeah.
And they were swift in the Justin Fields move. And they've had a very quiet, very buttoned-up offseason, the complete opposite of what they've been the last couple of years. All those things tell me now the buyouts or the buyout option to 170 of the 250 existing employees, they've tried to change the building. When you change a building, theoretically, you can change a culture. There are so many things that are telling me, all right, Woody, I think that long, hard stare that you had in the mirror recently is working. But my fear is the first time something goes awry, that his defense mechanism is going to bubble back to the surface, and he's going to get back in his own way. How do you trust the new direction of the Jets?
I don't think you can. I think we see this the same way. Now, before we even get to where they're at right now, do you think at your core, Woody had impact on the Aaron Rodgers decision?
Yes.
Me too. Boomer said it either earlier this week or last week that he felt the same thing. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but he was basically alluding to that or paraphrasing, whatever it was, saying that Woody made that decision, that it was best the organization move on. If that's the case, I already feel like you're off on the wrong foot. Not saying it's right or wrong as it pertains to Rodgers.
Uh-huh.
What's wrong is the owner making that decision as
yes.
opposed to Muji and Aaron Glenn.
Agree with that,
okay.
If that's true. Yep.
So let's move on from that because we have to.
Mm-hmm.
Everything about what Glenn and Muji are doing is exactly what you would want from an organization. Glenn is a clear, no-nonsense guy who's got direction. He's got a plan and direction. Gives me goosebumps thinking about it. Does it mean it's going to work? I have no idea. Do I love Justin Fields? Not really. They believe in him. Okay, fine. We'll see. But at least there is a plan in place, and it's not this, I don't know, avalanche of negative emotions and forced things by the owner and hope that it's going to work out with a top pick and an inexperienced GM. It feels like Glenn knows what it takes, and he is being allowed to put those principles into effect with the Jets. Therefore, I do believe that they're set up better than before, and I do believe if they can have some early success and Woody sees Glenn's plan working, he will let it go.
I tend to agree, but now let's go back to what we just said about how you and I both think that Woody was the impetus behind the moving on from Rodgers.
Right.
That was the first big organizational decision was, you know, who are you going to hire? And it was Muji, and then it was Glenn. Okay. But now, once these two men were brought here to change the culture and completely reverse the direction of the franchise, if he was heavy-handed in the Rodgers decision, to your point, and I get it, and I think it's a really good one, what's going to dissuade him from being heavy-handed again the first time something big comes across his plate? And it could come as soon as 3 weeks from now on draft night. Like, what if there is something that he just fundamentally believes, whether it's a quarterback, a trade, whatever it might be, and he, I'm not saying he flexes on Muji and Glenn, but he's a little too in voicing his opinion, which could die. Could persuade them maybe to rethink it or do something that is against their judgment. I don't know. I want to be fair to Woody. Not that he's earned the benefit of the doubt. He just hasn't. But it's been different enough this offseason that at least I can say maybe he's learned something.
I love the hypothetical because it could be a reality. Do you think Glenn has enough cachet or enough guts to say, Woody, we got this?
I do.
Me too. That was part of the reason why I wanted Pete Carroll, for example, is because if Woody hired Pete Carroll or Bill Belichick, just to name two, you know that those guys aren't going to tolerate him meddling. And I wanted to eliminate that from the equation. When you hire a first-time GM and a first-time head coach, Woody meddling is still in the equation. However, I do think if there is a first-time head coach that might be able to get Woody to get out of the way as opposed to being a detriment or a roadblock, Aaron Glenn is trying to clean up an epic mess, and Woody meddling is only going to get in the way of that. I'm not saying, like, you're the owner. Obviously, you're going to have some say.
Sure.
I'm talking about just let them do their jobs without you getting in the way for a couple of years. And if then you feel like it's not the right hires and you want to step in, okay, whatever. But just don't be another hurdle for Aaron Glenn to have to overcome here on the way to try to build this program up.
Yeah, I mean, and again, the early signs are favorable. But listen, I'm going to be honest with you here. Like, when the Jets were woofing about the Super Bowl and they were, you know, front and center every day with the Rodgers speculation, and then the Hard Knocks, and then the 7 primetime games, I ate it up.
Right.
You know, it's nice to feel loved once. I mean, really, it really is. I mean, for any fan of any historically and frequently, you know, downtrodden team, the first national taste that you get, it's like a drug.
Right.
You know, not that I'm sitting there watching all these segments. Half the time I'm on the air while it's happening, but, you know, we've got a TV in studio. You know, I see Stephen A. and whoever else is, you know, Rodgers, McAfee, Skip when he was still doing the show, whatever it was called. Rodgers, when it wasn't Cowboys, Rodgers. Like, it was appealing to hear the national discourse include the Jets, and it wasn't about them being the butt of a joke. But I've learned my lesson, and I much prefer this route, taking the side door, working in a very stealth, anonymous way, and I'm hoping that this is finally the right path, provided Woody stays out of the way. So far, he has, And once that temptation comes, I hope he resists it.
It's the hard way. There's no easy fix. The Jets tried with the easy fix with Rodgers. Yeah. It was fun. We had the hope. We had the excitement.
Well,
they had
fun.
The attention. Well, the beginning
okay,
of it was
okay.
fun.
It had was the intoxicating. Hope.
And then it became a disaster. But this may not be as exciting, as sexy. It may not be as fun. But it may be necessary to finally build this team out of the abyss. BT and Sal on the Fan, 888-808-1019. Let's get back to the Mets calls, BT. Mets and Yanks, we started the first hour talking about them and obviously the injury to Sean Manaea and all that's going on with the Mets. Charles is calling from Allenhurst, New Jersey. What's up, Charles?
What's up, guys? How you doing?
Good.
All right, so Sal, I don't know if you caught this last night, but I caught it, and listen, he chose to start Acuna over Beatty, even against the righty, let alone one of the toughest right-handed pitchers in the game last night, and he had some success. He took a fastball up and away, drove it over the head of the right fielder. If it doesn't bounce over the wall, maybe it's a triple, but I didn't understand, and then he hit another ball hard up the middle that he made a nice play on, but I didn't understand in the seventh inning against a Marlin bullpen, and whatever pitcher they're going to bring out of there is worse than Sandy, going to Beatty against the righty. Why not leave Acuna in, who's shown that he can be at least competitive and give you something in the major leagues, and Beatty's doing nothing.
A caller brought it up before. It was the eighth inning, and they pinch hit Beatty for Acuna, but I don't think it was about the matchup necessarily. You know, it could be. I'm sure some of the data or analytics for whatever that pitcher is best at, maybe they felt like Beatty was the best option there. I do believe, though, Charles, it was more about trying to get Beatty an opportunity. If you're not giving Beatty an opportunity against a righty and they didn't to start the game, it's game five of the season. They got to get him some at-bats.
But not at the expense of somebody who was flowing, who's also young. Think about that. So we're talking about the trajectory of Beatty, but there's also the growth of Acuna. And to me, when you show some discernible growth, I'm not going to pull the plug on that. I'm going to ride that a little bit.
I think it's okay to sacrifice a game in early April to get somebody at bats, in this case Beatty, to see what he's made of. Now, you could argue then maybe he just should have started him, but the counter to that would be he started Acuna for a reason, and Acuna paid dividends. So maybe it was more specific to a matchup. Maybe it was both specific to the matchup and also trying to get Beatty some action. It's a two-run game. So,
yeah.
I mean, here's the way I would answer it. I trust Acuna more to get on base down two runs against whoever's on the mound than I do Brett Beatty. So I can't explain why Mendoza.
But I
believe there was good reason why. You know, Mendoza just didn't wake up all of a sudden and forget how to manage. There had to be good reason for why he went with Beatty there.
Well, think about this. Remember when we talked about this and it wound up coming to fruition? He didn't do anything. But when I said, yeah, I think Goldschmidt's going to hit first here because of the reverse splits with Corbin Burnes. Like, the easiest thing to do is sit on the couch. I'm not calling out the last caller. I think it's a common mistake, or at least a common reaction. You're sitting there saying, all right, we've got a righty on the mound. You know, what the hell are we doing here? Well, let's start the lefty and get him going here. He didn't do that. Started the righty. Righty played well. And then when the righty's playing well, then you go to the lefty in a more conventional righty-lefty matchup, which makes sense, even though it didn't work out. It makes some sense, but not fully, but it didn't work out. What I don't think is being incorporated in the moment is calculating or doing the research. I'm not even saying that I'm doing it.
Right.
All right, what is this particular pitcher throwing?
Right.
If it's a slider, I can promise you that they have numbers on Beatty and everybody, but maybe it's more favorable. Hey, Beatty loves the slider. For righty versus lefty, he's hitting .327 against sliders. Like, it really is that detailed. Now, you don't want to be married to that stuff because it becomes paralyzing, and that takes away the gut. Like the way Acuna was swinging the bat and the way just the vibe that he was presenting for a team that's been fairly lifeless offensively so far this year, I'm not looking to get rid of him. I'm looking for more reasons to get him to the plate more.
Yeah, and it could have changed the game because of a two-run game in the eighth inning, and you get Acuna on, setting the table for some of those top guys. Who knows how the game could have been different, but I'm not going to go nuts because I do believe that there was a part of that, the matchup that they felt. And also, you have to, otherwise just get rid of him now. Send him down to the minors. You have to find out what Beatty is. That is an important part, an early part of the season. Them identifying what they have in Brett Beatty once and for all. I'm not playing this game anymore. I'm not playing this game throughout the course of the summer. I'm not playing this game next year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Beatty had a hot spring. They've already taken some opportunity away from him. If he's not starting against the righties,
What's he here for?
And by the way, BT, he should be starting against lefties, too. If you want to find out if the guy's a major leaguer, I mean, what? We can't have him see a lefty?
Well, think about Ben Rice last night. I mean, he got that last at-bat, and yeah, he took him deep.
There you go.
And it was pure filth. Martinez, as we said, was nasty. Four or five strikeouts in a row. I prefer to get some answers in April so that I'm not guessing in June and July what it means a little bit more.
BT and Sal on the fan. Ron is in Massapequa. What's up, Ron?
Hey, Ron.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
What's up, buddy?
I agree with you guys 100% on Beatty, but the point I think what people are missing is he should have batted for Siri. You got Taylor coming off the bench early. Why did Siri have to bat there? He's a 190 hitter. We already know he stinks. We don't know about Beatty yet, but we know Siri's a 190 hitter. Why is he batting there?
Yeah, well, Siri's got some. He's got some juice with his legs, obviously, Ron. And thank you for the call. Siri's a guy who is going to drive fans nuts because his potential and athleticism is eye-popping, right? You're drawn to that. I love the defense. I love that. I told you, BT, whether it was Kenneth Fareed years ago, I love guys who specialize and are great in one area of things. Even Ray Ordonez, one of my favorite players ever, because he was great defensively. Okay, couldn't hit a lick, couldn't run, but I love guys that are specialists. Siri is not only a great defensive center fielder, which I love and value, he's got pop.
Yeah, he does.
So there's a threat every time he's in the batter's box that he could go deep, and he's got blazing speed.
Yep.
So in the rare event that he actually works his way on a base, he could be a problem. So I wouldn't look to pinch hit for him there either, especially with Beatty. If you're telling me game's on the line and you've got a legit bat off the bench, whether it's a Marte or Winker, to give you a better bat, that's a different story. I'm not looking to get Beatty in there for Siri.
Neither am I. Siri is interesting, though, because he's got those tantalizing gifts where if you catch him on the right, and listen, I know that most Mets fans know what he was before he got here, what the scouting report was, but if you catch him on the right night, you're like, this guy's an all-star. Yeah, he's got a hose. Right. He can go get it. He can hit a 435-foot bomb. He can steal second and third with his eyes shut. He could steal runs for you. But then if you watch him on the wrong night, you're like, he has a double-A approach in terms of getting himself in a hitter's count and expanding the zone. So I did not have an issue with him hitting either, but I am interested to see what kind of leash he gets from Mendy if some of the other guys aren't carrying their weight and you need a little more production. Not so much pop, but consistency from one of the batters if, say, Pete's having it down first 2 months, or Lindor remains down.
But think about it this way, and this is why I love Siri. I love Acuna 8, Siri 9. Or you could, if you want to reverse that, fine. But either way, I love those two as 8-9 guys. We're talking about the 9 hitter. What?
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. It's March, so Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this year. There's just nothing like betting in March. Breakdowns of every region and every game. From conference tournaments to the Final Horn, we'll have the picks and the plays on every single game. Cinderella spotlights, upset alerts, and some of that value for the last team standing. It's tourney time, so hunker down and bet the board with us. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Other nine hitter in Major League Baseball possesses the speed or power that Siri does, plus the Gold Glove defense. So even if you gave me nothing offensively and you gave Gold Glove defense, I could make an argument that I could live with that in the nine spot. Obviously, you have to be capable or competent elsewhere, and I think the Mets are. But this is a nine hitter who's a Gold Glove defensive player, blazing speed, and pop. If you compare him to other nine hitters or eight hitters around the sport, I think you're doing okay.
Okay, now I choose to look at it a little differently. I don't totally disagree. I get where you're coming from, but I choose to compare him to other center fielders because right now he's the Mets starting center fielder. Right. And, you know, again, we could illuminate these positive traits, and there are many. I mean, again, if you put him at like a tryout camp, he might be the first overall pick. If he's just taking batting practice, run of the 60 and throwing from right field, I mean,
he's got tools.
He's going to stand out as the toolbox is overflowing. But if he's your starting center fielder and he's hitting, I keep saying 180. I mean, let me say 200. Let me give him a little bit higher or even like 205. Yeah. That is, it's not optimal, but it's acceptable if the other guys are doing their job.
Right.
The one thing, and I think that the stars certainly will. The one thing about the Mets lineup, and I've said this all winter, I don't like the bottom third. You know, Alvarez is not here. McNeil is not healthy and not what he was. Beatty, who knows? I guess if there was more length to the lineup, maybe 1 through 7, I'd be more acceptable of series deficiencies with the average. But if you're going to hit 190 to 200 and it's only Soto and Lindor for the most part, I don't know if that's going to work with the Mets pitching staff.
It might not. I personally value it. He's a career 209 hitter. He hit 187 last season in 130 games, 448 plate appearances. So he's certainly not a great player. Okay, would you rather have Tyrone Taylor up there in that spot?
No. Okay. I mean, but that doesn't mean that that's the right answer either. Maybe the right answer is somebody different than both of those guys.
I like
big
Taylor.
Picture.
I think Taylor's a gamer, gritty, good winning ball player, good bench piece. But the power that Siri possesses and the speed, to me, I'd rather deal with that. And again, we're talking about a nine hitter. I disagree. Well, I like the bottom of the order because I like Acuna, what he brings. Now, if you're putting Beatty in there, that's different. Obviously, Torrens in there. Torrens is a serviceable backup.
Yeah.
But he's not you don't want him to be the everyday guy. Right now, he's got to be the everyday guy without Francisco Alvarez. So it could look a little weaker than it was supposed to look. But I don't think it's going to be a big deal, especially when Lindor gets going and Alonso and Nimmo and Vientos will find their stride. Now you're talking about five legit bats.
Yep. I still think they're going to have to win some of these games. And again, I've said this forever, 7-6-6-5. And I do think that they'll get there. I don't know if they'll get there as quickly as Met fans want. And if that's the case, where the offense is supposed to carry the staff early and some guys are a little slow out of the chute and Siri is hitting 170, we're going to get a lot of calls on him. If they're running him out there every day and he's just giving away two empty at-bats a night, which you do when you're a 170, 180, 190 hitter, I wonder the tolerance. Forget about from us or Mendoza. I think Met fans are going to grow frustrated despite the fact that he can hit one to the moon.
And I don't think the Mets are going to tolerate that either because they've shown the track record. Stern certainly would not. It seems likely at this point the Marlins are going to be looking to move him, which is just ridiculous. I mean, the Marlins should just fold up shop.
They're a joke.
Every time they get a good player, it's going to be about moving him. Now, Alcantara, just before we get into the details of what is being said here, he is under contract for this year, next year, and then there is a team option for 2027.
You got to give up. Before you even ask me the question, I think that that's three, possibly four top 10 prospects.
I mean, dude.
It's a massive haul.
And this is what I mean about the Marlins should be folding up shop. The guy, he's not hitting his free agency this year.
Yeah.
He's under control for two and a half seasons. I mean, I guess three if you count this year. This whole year, next whole year, and then the team option at $21 million, which is a freebie. So it's guaranteed you'd be picking that up. Even if he had an injury, you'd still rather pay him $20 million with the potential that he has at age 31. So anyway, you got him basically under control for 3 years. Let me get you some of the stuff from Puma here talking about this. I'm not going to read the whole thing word for word, but basically if Alcantara's available, the Mets will undoubtedly be paying attention. Let me get some quotes from some of the players here. This is Soto. Soto, quote, and I find it odd that Lindor chimed in on it saying it would be a Soto-like move if they could get him. And then you have Soto saying it would be one of the best trades that we could have. I know we have great pitching here, but adding a Cy Young winner like that would be huge. Soto did add it's going to take a lot to get him. Soto, again, if he goes to a team that has a chance to compete in the end, I think you're going to see who he is. He's doing that on a team that's no serious. So, I mean, this is a Soto. He's doing it on a team that has no serious chance to go to the playoffs, but he keeps trying and competing even without run support. Wherever he goes, whenever he goes to a winning team, you're going to see what Sandy Alcantara is capable of. Dude, I mean, these are like,
A very aggressive scouting report for somebody who's on another team.
Are you allowed to even do that?
Well, yeah, management couldn't quite do that. I don't think there's any sort of, you know, infringements on the tampering from a player perspective. You can say whatever you want. Maybe a little unethical.
Right.
Maybe not exactly well-received in the Marlins front office, but I don't think there's anything that could happen.
Feels weird. Now, Soto did compliment his own pitching staff, and we know what he would mean. Now, Alcantara, not just tied to potentially the Mets, also the Yankees. All right, so let's have the conversation, BT. Let's assume he becomes available. Mm-hmm. Let's assume both the Mets and Yanks want to go after him. From a Yankees perspective, I don't know if it's the right move because you just gave up a boatload to get Soto last year. You also invested heavily in money in the starting rotation. Are you now going to invest more resources, in this case, top prospect? Like, would you give up Lombard to get him?
That's one kid I don't want to give up.
But you would agree that it might
be a little different. Oh, yeah, you'd have to.
You probably
would, I don't
know
that,
right?
I would, though.
Fair to talk about. And now, if it's not just a finance thing, a prospect thing, let's say the Yankees could go all in on Vlad Jr. or Kyle Tucker, maybe more likely next year.
Mm-hmm.
I think Tucker's going to be the guy.
Yep, I hope so.
All right, so if the Marlins say, yeah, we'll give you Alcantara, but you got to give us Lombard as the centerpiece.
And I know the Yankees get Tucker.
Yeah.
That's different. Then you got
Well, you're not going to know.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's why it's a delicate dance. At the end of the day, I would be more inclined to give up somebody like Lombard for a position player. Like, maybe like a Vlad. Because these pitchers, you get one injury, you're done for the year.
That's the point, and we've been making this whole point. See, I think it's different for the Mets because they haven't invested a lot in starting pitching, whether it be prospect capital or finances. The Yankees have. It's a different story. Also, Alcantara, if you put him on the Yankees, would he help? Oh, of course he'd help any team. Is he the final piece? I don't look at him as being the final piece for the Yankees. I maybe would prefer a bat. I mean, we got to see how things shake out here. I do think Alcantara, you could argue, would be the final piece for the Mets, at least on paper right now. Again, you got to see.
I don't think you can make the argument that he's the final piece on paper for the Mets and not the final piece on paper for the Yankees.
See, but the Yankees already have an ace.
But he's hurt now.
No,
he's Fried. About Fried.
Yeah, I mean,
if you roll out Fried and Alcantara and say Schmidt heel, or I mean, that's, then you got a hit, obviously, and I know October's pretty random, but geez, that team, if they can't win a World Series,
I get it.
The Yanks are never going to win a World Series.
I'm not saying it wouldn't help them, but the Yankees, the Mets to me are lacking a true top of the rotation starter.
I agree with that.
The Yankees they currently have one. They have one, the Mets have none, which is why I think he's more important that the Mets go out there and get. I don't think it's imperative the Yankees go out there and make that.
Okay, move. I'm playing literally off what you said. So that hits me a little different there. What I would say is, I would say that he is more, I'd stop short of imperative, but along those lines, of an acquisition for the Mets to make sure they're absolutely a playoff team.
Well, I think they're going to be a playoff team anyway.
I picked them under 90.5, so that's consistent with what I thought. But what I'm saying is, like, again, the first thing that's why I reacted the way I did. When you first said that Alcantara on paper makes the Mets more of a World Series team than the Yankees, I don't feel that at all.
No, I feel like the Yankees are better in the rotation right now than the Mets are, which would mean that they're better suited to go take on the Dodgers, let's say, based on their current rotation, assuming Heel comes back.
Okay.
Fried, Heel, Rodon, than the Mets would be right now, even if Manaea comes back to go against the Dodgers.
I would agree with that.
Okay, so that's all that I'm saying. Now, obviously, it would make the Yankees better.
Okay.
And so let's just focus from the Yankees' perspective for a second.
Mm-hmm.
It would make the Yankees better, clearly.
I think it would make anybody better. Make the Tigers get him with that combination.
So that should go without saying.
Yep.
Then from a Yankees perspective, knowing that they've invested so many resources in that starting rotation already,
mm-hmm.
Rodon, Cole, Fried, all money, sure.
Yeah.
Would you then be willing to, on top of that, give up the prospect capital it would take to get Alcantara in here?
It's hard to answer that now. Because by the time this trade is made, and I do believe he'll be dealt this year, I don't know. But at least I'll have probably two more months of information on what's Dominguez look like, who is truly Volpe, who is, you know, is Ben Rice real? I mean, to what degree? I'm not saying he's going to be Don Mattingly, but is he really truly viable? You know, is Austin Wells really as good as I think, and he's going to be an all-star? If you get more yeses to those questions than no's, then I'm a lot more willing to make it.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? If
yes.
not, if I don't love the way these young position players are trending, I'm not looking to get rid of a guy who, again, early read seems very different than many of their recent prospects who play positions.
Okay. Now let's do the Mets side of things.
Yeah.
Would you be willing to give up the prospect capital necessary to go get Alcantara if you're the Mets?
Yes.
That's kind of what I'm saying. It's not... You know what I mean?
I got you.
The
I
Mets
you
are
now.
In a spot
yeah,
where
yeah, yeah.
they, it's not that they're more desperate, but they have a clear area of need
mm-hmm.
in this particular department, which means if you ask me, would I give up Sproat, Jet Williams? What's it going to take? Probably that.
I think it'd take more than that.
Okay.
And with all those years that he's under contract?
All right, so
well, I said maybe four top 10 players.
All right, so I asked you Lombard, and you're saying,
I just happen to think he's a little different, like at a position that's going to be.
But you're entitled to say that. That's fine. If you ask me, give me the Mets' best guys. There's one guy that I wouldn't want to give up. And
Vientos.
No.
Oh.
He's an answer. Acuna. But if it's going to be the deal breaker, I do it.
Mm-hmm.
But so you name anybody that's in the Mets minor league system. I don't care which pitcher it is. Pick one of the pitchers. Pick your two players if you want. Jet Williams, you want, like I said, I wouldn't want to do it with Acuna, but I would if he were a deal breaker.
Yeah.
But I'd rather give up some of the other guys there. Gilbert, Jet Williams, whatever. You pick them, you could have them. I think the Mets are at that point
where they're building. They need an arm like that. I don't disagree. You know, but the other thing too, Sal, like the money that the Mets have earmarked for Manaea, 2 years, that's going to be over before you know it.
Right.
Pete very well could opt out, and if he doesn't, after 2 years, in all probability, gone anyway. There's no money in the catcher right now. There's no money in center field. Soto, Nimmo by the time, even though maybe a little overpay, a little extra year, whatever, but it's not a horrendous. There's no money invested at third base. Like, you could give up a ton of prospects from a Mets perspective and then just go out and then redistribute some of the money that you have allocated toward players now, like Pete and some of the others,
right,
that are going to expire, and go out and buy yourself a position player or two, whether it's a Vlad, whether it's a Tucker, whether it's somebody else that eventually hits the market. Somebody always does.
Right.
That's why I think that's a pretty viable route for the Mets. They need another arm.
Yeah, and it's almost the perfect spot for them because they need a top arm. They need an arm, period, but they need a top arm. And what are you going to do with all these prospects? It's great to say, oh, yeah, they have all these guys. There aren't enough spots on the diamond. Could you argue that Jet Williams could be their center fielder at some point this year or next year? Maybe. Okay, but that's one spot. And to your point, if you trade him, then just go find a center fielder with your money in the offseason, or figure out another way to do it. Look at second base. Look at the amount of guys that we're talking about. Beatty, Acuna, Jeff McNeil, Mauricio potentially. You're throwing Gilbert to the equation, not at second base, but you see what I'm saying?
Like,
there are not enough spots for everybody, which means that at some point, you're going to have to identify the ones that you believe are going to be starters at the major league level, and you're going to have to identify the ones that you are going to get rid of or use best as trade chips. That's why I think it's a perfect match for the Mets.
But there's always a limit on, even somebody like Cohen, but there's always a limit on what you are willing to do in terms of the ridiculous contracts. Like, the Yankees, you had to go out and get Soto, but you gave up Michael King to do it,
right?
Okay. There's only so many Michael Kings in the system.
Right.
And when you start to give those players away, granted, for an incredible talent, now Alcantara is not the pitching equivalent of Soto because there's just not as it's not quite the same. Alcantara is really good. Soto with certain things is all time with the on-base stuff. It's different. But I think you've got to be, and I think this is something Stearns will be great at. I think those first big trades, and I don't mean should we bring back Pete, or those first big moves, do we bring back Pete, do we sign Alonso, Soto? Of course you try to sign Soto, obviously. I'm talking about the first massive trade that comes across his desk. I think he's going to be so adept and in tune with the minor league system, what they can't give up, what they think is overrated. I think that might be one of his best attributes, and he hasn't really started playing that game yet.
A good question.
Three random questions.
Let's find out.
With Brendan Tierney and Sal Licata.
One, two, three.
On The Fan.
All right, BT, a little three or a Q. Three random questions every Wednesday at 11:40. Number one, what is the minimum amount that you would cash a check for?
cash a check, meaning I just, well, not a deposit.
Well, like,
just
let's say there's a specific example here. You've done movies or TV shows. And
yeah.
Sometimes there are royalties, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I've only done one in my life.
Which one?
The Undoing. It was on HBO. And I wasn't,
really?
I don't even know if I was actually in it, but like I read for the part.
When was this?
Yeah, a couple of years ago.
Okay.
They were at SNY, whatever it was. They nice. Had a couple of people read for it. And I keep getting these checks.
Sally Bacala.
No. It was just like a voiceover thing, I think. Anyway, I keep getting these checks in the mail.
Okay.
Now, sometimes they were good, you know, $60 or
sure,
whatever.
I mean,
whatever.
Sometimes they're $3.12.
Yeah, sometimes 14. Yeah. Sometimes $14. Sometimes 14 cents.
Yeah.
And then I've been recently getting a barrage of like 12 cents, 35 cents,
oh,
40.
God almighty.
So I'm assuming you've had similar stuff with one of the shows. Maybe you're doing, maybe you get more. Who knows with the royalties. But mm-hmm. anyway, point is, what would be the amount that's a minimum that you cash the check?
Honestly, I think I'd cash everything. I'm not going to run to the bank and say, here, sir or ma'am, here's my 12-cent deposit. I do think there's a 180-day expiration. I think you've got a defined window as to how long you can cash the checks. Because if there wasn't that window, what I would do is I might, if I'm getting consistently every week or every month, whatever it might be, you know, twice a month, you know, $1.19. I mean, listen, I worked for it. So if I could save it up over the course of a year and, you know, and deposit $93 for the year, I'll deposit it, but I'm not going to go to the bank every time. No,
that's a tricky one. It is now easier because you could deposit checks right on your phone.
Take the picture, bang.
Yeah, so, but still, they pile up, and for whatever reason, I guess it re-airs somewhere, who knows, Australia.
Yeah, other countries,
so
for
when
sure.
it starts going on, then I'll just get the influx of three or four checks, and it comes with, like, it's a lot of paperwork. It's thick. You know, obviously, there's the one stub and then the check, but behind it, it's just a lot of wasted effort and paper for 12 cents. But I cash them. I don't know why. I take the picture. I get 12 cents, 35 cents, 45.
It's up, man.
I know, but it's annoying. All right.
Digestion toll for you halfway home.
Right. It barely pays for the path ride coming in. All right. Number two, what's worse, being sneaky short or sneaky tall?
I know why you're asking this.
Yes, you do.
All right. So I don't see why sneaky tall would ever be an issue. Now, I don't mean this to sound... Well,
you are tall.
No, but like I'm thinking, like, say if I was single, okay?
Right.
I cast no aspersions. I truly don't. But when I was dating, I generally gravitated to... A young lady who was a little smaller than
shorter,
me.
Shorter, okay. Yeah.
I don't know if
for
it's a protective
reason,
thing
yeah.
or whatever. I don't know. I'm not looking to marry a 6'5" power forward. That, right. But that's just me. Some people do. No, honestly. So well, I just say this because, like, sneaky tall, I'm thinking of the opposite sex because from my perspective, it can never be bad to be sneaky tall. To be sneaky short, which is what Aaron Boone said to you the other day at Yankee Stadium.
Yeah.
The first thing you said when he came up to talk to us in the suite and jump on the
second
air.
Second time,
yeah,
anyway.
He goes, wow. He goes, you're sneaky short. I was like, huh. I just kept it moving. I want some more clarity as to what you mean. This seems to be more of a you thing than a me thing. Let's go.
Well, correct, because I've been giving this a lot of thought. I've never in my life ever had anybody even question my height. Now, I'm not tall, but I wouldn't consider myself short either. I would say I'm... probably average, 5'10", whatever. That's right.
Well, if you're truly 5'10", that's absolutely, I think, slightly higher than the male. Slightly.
All right, so what's average?
I think it's 5'9".
Okay, so what,
I think.
Okay, until I started working with you
mm-hmm.
and taking pictures with you and people posting it on social media.
I do notice that a lot.
Right, so people say, oh, you're short. And I get it, like, sometimes the perception could be off, but also standing next to you or some of the pro wrestlers that we have in
Hoff
here.
Hoff is big.
Or athletes, yeah. So
Mental.
I am, on this show,
yeah.
I am definitely short. And I don't even care one way or another. But I think that it comes from, and Boone, this is the second time that this has happened.
When he was
in studio first, he goes, man,
you're small.
You're short.
Yeah.
And then again at the stadium on opening day, the first thing he says is, you're sneaky short.
Yes, he did.
And then
first
I thought
thing.
About it. So I must, for whatever reason,
mm-hmm.
sound like in his mind when he listens to me,
yes.
or maybe other people. Maybe I sound, I don't know if sounding taller is a thing, but when they see me, it's like, oh, I didn't realize you were just like an average, small.
Well, you come across as a pit bull, and then they see, and they're like, who's the little poodle?
But that
who let the little chihuahua in the room? No, it's funny.
Little guy?
Sal, you're tapping into something, the psychology, because I used to get, before people really saw me like on SNY back in the
day,
I used to get a lot of, wow, and this is not a humble because whatever, but like, oh, wow, you're actually in better shape than you thought. Like, for whatever reason, people thought maybe because I'm loud and back then even maybe louder and maybe a little more obnoxious and combative, whatever. Oh, I thought you were just fat. You look like you played sports. I didn't actually think that you did. I don't know why people would form that opinion, but they did back then. I think with you, because you're loud, like me, because you're aggressive, like me, and combative, I think that there's a direct association. Well, he's probably a pretty big dude.
And when you see that me in person, it's like, oh, he's just... So to answer the question, I would rather be sneaky short.
You would?
Yes, because then... Like, because I'm okay with my height. I really don't care.
Yeah.
But at least I feel like it's... Then maybe I'm doing something right, projecting whatever somebody perceives.
Whereas
to
if
be...
they said you're sneaky tall, they're like, yeah, you got to come across as a wuss on the radio.
Yeah. Like, wow.
No, you're I got you. Ah, that's an interesting question.
Twice he said it.
By the way, I told him to say it. Second time. First time
How tall
was
he? You guys are the same?
I think Aaron's 6'3".
Come on.
It's a big boy.
Boone, you know what? Sneaky tall. I didn't think you had that in you. The way you play the card game.
I thought you were going to say sneaky bad bullpen move last night. Anyway.
No. All right, last one. Yeah. And this is more of a sad note here. Val Kilmer passed away.
I saw that.
All right, favorite Val Kilmer movie or role?
I thought he was great in Batman. I thought he was phenomenal in The Doors. Do you ever see The Doors movie?
I did not. I was just looking over his IMDb. God. What about...
So
good. What about... what the hell is it?
So
Top Gun.
Good. Which one?
Top Gun. Where
excellent.
He was
Oh, God. Great in Top Gun. He was in Entourage, by the way.
Was he?
He was a... Yeah, I don't
remember
know if it was
that.
A recurring role. He definitely did... a couple of the shows, Val Kilmer was, like, he just looked Hollywood. He was in good shape. He had the Hollywood face. He projected that. Very sad what happened to him. But I think, Hoff, you're a big music guy. You probably liked the Doors movie, or at least saw it. I thought he was great in the Doors. I really did.
Did you see that one, Hoff?
Yeah.
I did not.
You didn't see it?
Wow. I didn't see it, but I'm not a Doors guy.
I'm not a huge Doors fan. I like some of their really popular songs, but not crazy.
And 91, so I was a little young.
Early.
And my first memory of Val Kilmer was Batman Forever.
Ah, it was so good there.
Now, a lot of people, though, look at that Batman, you know, the different Batman movies
we've had.
Before was Michael Keaton.
Keaton was the best for me,
okay.
Number one.
And now we have Christian Bale, the most recent one.
Well,
I know
Bale was he the most recent or second to most? I think he may have been the penultimate most recent.
The new Batman.
Ben Affleck's been in there, and then the other guy.
That was awful, Ben Affleck.
Yeah, I actually didn't watch that one. I got to go back and catch up on that just because I like watching them all. But the original was Keaton.
Yep.
And then, so was Val Kilmer.
I thought Val was number two.
Right, he might have been, right.
I think he was.
Right, so the Batman Forever was supposed to be like the third movie in that line, but it was Val Kilmer instead of Keaton. I like those movies. I know they were more cartoony, but I enjoyed them.
Me too. Do you have his eyes? So you have his
page. I have it up, yeah.
Hit me with some of the movies here.
Heat.
Heat was good.
Yeah, I know that was a good movie.
He was very good.
True Romance. Another great
movie.
Good. I don't remember
him. Yeah,
that
was good. That was good.
I mean, I'm going back to some of the older ones here.
Yep.
Hop, you feel free to insert yourself.
The Island of Dr. Moreau was an underrated one. I really liked that. It was weird, but it was good. I thought it was really
The Saint, I feel like I've heard of, but maybe that was only because of after Val Kilmer was put on my map after Batman Forever, then I remember hearing more about him.
His best role probably is Tombstone, though, I would think.
I didn't see that.
Hold on a sec. Hey,
didn't
listen.
See Tombstone?
Yeah. Our guy Hurley weighing in.
Well, he's good with this. What does Big Hurls have
Doc
to say?
Doc Holliday and Tombstone. Tombstone was a great movie. Tombstone, by the way, was, you know, I mean, I can think of more exciting ways to spend your first bachelor party, but I was probably like 16? I was very young. And one of my best friend's older brothers was having a bachelor party. Very, very low key. Again, not our kind of bachelor party, but a good one. Yeah, sitting around, maybe having a few beers, whatever, doing some stuff. And we watched Tombstone for the first time. And it was awesome. And he was great in Tombstone. I remember that very well. I thought Heat was phenomenal. Batman was great. He was good in Entourage. The Doors was money. What else am I missing here?
Top Gun was great. Especially, did you see the second Top Gun, the one that came out a couple years ago?
I did not. And the crazy thing is, and this is bad, I've got to see it. My father-in-law actually at fighter pilot school, this is a true story, won the Top Gun Award. Like, he was the literal Top Gun. as a Marine when he was learning how to fly. Like, when I go back to Dallas, I'll be there for Easter for a few days, and when I see his buddies, like, they talk about him like he was the Jordan of the skies. And so anything with Top Gun, I'd love, but I, for some reason, have not seen Top Gun 2.
Yeah, I would highly recommend going back and seeing that. I don't remember the original Top Gun very well, but I remember liking it as a kid. This movie I love, so I want to go back. Actually, you know, now people be in the mood for Val Kilmer movies because we're talking about and hearing it. I'm going to do the maybe Top Gun again, but I'm definitely going to do the Batman, starting with Keaton. I'll do the Batman trilogy and then finish up with Batman Returns. All right, R.I.P. to Val Kilmer.
We'll come back.
We'll come back. And I didn't even know he was sick for a while, apparently. I guess, right?
Years.
Okay.